Welcome to Local Talk on KHOI Community Radio, where we explore the people, stories, and events of Central Iowa. I'm your host for today, Susan Franzen, and my co-host is Gina McAndrews.
Hello, Susan.
Hi, Gina. Today, we will be exploring one of the most beloved characters of Central Iowa, Kate Shelley, who has inspired more legends, songs, and lore than perhaps anyone else in our listening area. In fact, the theme music for each Local Talk program begins with Backtrackin' from the CD The Ballad of Kate Shelley by local musicians Al Harris and Tom Richards.
When we found out that the author of a forthcoming biography, Kate Shelley, Heroine of the High Bridge, was speaking in Boone on April 20th, we decided that this was a great opportunity to explore the story.
The author of this book, Misty McNally, used to spend a lot of time in Boone when she was growing up, visiting her grandparents. Let's hear how she tells about it.
The thrill for me, it was seeing the Kate Shelley Bridge. And I remember that when they first told me the story, I could not believe that a bridge was named after a girl. Probably the biggest thing I had ever seen that was man-made. Then my grandma would tell me that Kate Shelley was this teenage girl and she crossed a bridge at night in a storm to save a passenger train from going into a wreck. And I just thought that was amazing. I thought that was a great story. And, you know, is it true, Grandma? Is it true? And yes, it's true. It's true.
But in her talk, Misty admitted that the story was a lot more complicated than that. We decided that we needed an accurate as well as dramatic account of what really happened on the night when that terrible storm and flood washed out a bridge on Honey Creek.
Thanks to the archives at the Boone County Historical Center, we have such an account in the words of Kate Shelley herself. This is how she described the night. It was as dark as midnight, and then, down in sheets, came the waters of that appalling storm. We watched it until fright took possession of us, until it drove us from the windows through which the lightning flashed dreadful pictures of destruction. There was no house near, and if we were to have help, we must furnish it ourselves. We sat and watched the storm, looking for it to finish, and at a late hour began to tremble for the trains when the engine passed to the west. Mother assured me that no train would be dispatched in such a storm, and so we hoped and prayed. Honey Creek was loaded with all kinds of burdens, picket fences, lumber, trees, and stumps, along with the rubbish swept down and heaped against the pilings of the bridge. The storm had raged from 6 o'clock to 11 p.m., when, in a lull, the rumble of a train was heard crossing the long bridge, slowly pulling out, going east. It was the pusher, obeying an order to cross and go to Boone. Run to Boone and return to Moingona, regardless of all trains. W.P. Ward. The engine was backing over the road, the brakeman and the section foreman standing on the running board behind the tender, keeping a lookout, as we learned afterward, and signaling the engineer. The fireman, named Olmsted, climbed out from the cab over the coal, saying, as he came back, "Make room for me, boys!" I heard the bell toll twice, distinctly, as she swayed on the uprooted bridge, and then came the horrible crash and the fierce hissing of the steam as tender and engine went down in 25 feet of water, told the nature of the fate that had overtaken them. The shock seemed to shake the earth. "Oh, Mother," I said, "it is number 11. They've gone down Honey Creek Bridge." It seemed as still as death, as silent as the grave. The storm and all else was forgotten. And I said that I must go to help the men and to stop the passenger train that would soon be at Moingona, the midnight train from the west. Remonstrances were of no avail. I felt I had to go. I believe that God makes strong the weakest and makes the poorest of us able to endure much for his merciful purposes. When they found that I was not to be dissuaded, Mother said, "Go then in the name of God and do what you can." I had an old skirt and jacket. I caught up an old straw hat, improvised a light by hanging a little miner's lamp in the frame of an old lantern. I filled the little lamp for the wick. I used a strip of flannel from an old shirt and started out into the night and the storm to do what I could and what I thought was my duty, knowing that Mother and the children were praying God to keep me from harm. The entire valley, from which our doorway is like the inside of a huge oval chopping bowl, was full of water, rushing and swelling through the breach and covering the track. I went around the bluff in a semicircle behind and to the south of our house until I reached where the turn of road finds the cut in the spur of the bluffs, and then ran east along the track back to the broken bridge. As I came down the track, the lightning lit up the awful scene. Wood, the engineer, seeing me by the vivid lightning flashes, or catching the gleam of the lantern in the thick darkness, called out to me. He was caught by a branch after being swept from the cab and was safe in a tree in the midst of the swelling flood. His brakeman, Agar, was fortunate also in catching to a tree or a willow, but the other two of his hapless companions were lost, and only one of them was found, O'Donohue, the section man. He called to me again and again, but neither one of us could understand what the other said for the raging of the elements, and I turned toward Moingona, lying across and west of the great bridge. Hardly had I passed where now is the cottage of the old watchman when my feeble little lamp went out, and I was all alone. Only in the flashes of lightning could I now see the structure before me and the path I had to take to cross it. Those who cross a railroad bridge on a swiftly moving train can form no conception of the sensation of it that a traveler experiences who attempts to cross on foot a long and unprotected stretch of bridge timbers. 500 feet of bridging lay before me, and a misstep would send me down below the ties into the flood that was boiling below. The Des Moines River, into which the hundreds of streams in its watershed had been pouring all that evening and night, each one swollen like Honey Creek, was a furious flood that had pushed all bounds and covered all the lands about that were lower than the village, and was now straining hard at the bridge. The thunder and lightning were incessant. Fortunately for me, the downpour of rain had slackened somewhat, but the wind had come up and was blowing a gale, which made the passage still more perilous. I got down upon my hands and knees, carrying yet my useless lantern on my arm, and guiding myself by the stretch of rail, I began the weary passage of the bridge. I do not know how long I was in crossing, but it seemed an age. Halfway over, a piercing flash of lightning showed me the angry flood more clearly than ever, and swept along upon it a great tree. The earth still hanging to its roots was racing for the bridge, and it seemed for the very spot I stood upon. Fear brought me upright to my knees. I clasped my hands in terror and in prayer, I hope, lest the shock should carry out the bridge. But the monster darted under the bridge with a sweeping rush, and his branches scattered foam and water over me as he passed. Finding that I was yet unharmed, I resumed my painful and laborious mode of progression, and at length, I know not at what length, reached the solid ground, and then for a moment I stopped to breathe and straightened up for the run to the station, something more than an eighth of a mile distant. It was getting late, and how I told the tale, it would be hard to say, but I remember someone said, "The girl is crazy." I think it must have been the operator who said it. The girl must have lost her mind, as I told of the loss of number 11 and her unhappy crew. But Mr. McIntyre said, "My God, that's Kate Shelley." And they were soon able to realize the dreadful burden of my errand. The pusher that helped up the hill to Ogden was in the yard. Her screams soon brought the whole town around us. Everyone seemed to be up and about, and a body of men with ropes and material made ready to go over the bridge. They took me along with them to the scene of the disaster, and I led them around the face of the bluff as I had come, crossing the tracks above the house and coming down along the track on the eastern side of the washout, where alone help could be offered to the suffering survivors of the wreck. There was nothing possible for their relief before daybreak, when at last, by great patience and after many efforts, a rope was cast to wood, which he made fast to his tree, and then he came in hand over hand to his rescuers. Agar was taken off his refuge as soon as the water went down. Both men were much exhausted by their imprisonment of 5 hours.
July 6th, 1881, a fierce storm was raging. The rain just wouldn't stop coming down. The river and creeks were flooding in the Des Moines River Valley near the railroad station by Mondona Town. Around 11 in the evening, a pusher train went out to search for men looking for washouts along the track. Past the Shelley family home, a mighty crash the Shelleys heard. The Honey Creek Bridge had just collapsed. 15-year-old Kate Shelley ran outside into the storm, saw two men trapped down in that river grave. She couldn't rescue them herself, but knew that midnight train would be sooner coming down the tracks this way. 100 years from now, folks will still speak her name. Kate Shelley will always be that girl who saved the train.
Those were two pretty impressive versions of the story. But here in central Iowa, we can go beyond that. We can go to the spot and literally walk in Kate Shelley's footsteps. Not crossing the bridge, of course. The bridge at Mongona has been gone for years. But the Boone County Historical Center has a museum exhibit that we must see before we begin. The person to tell us about that is Charles Irwin, who was the director of the museum when the exhibit was put up. He's now teaching history at Des Moines Area Community College, DMAC, in Boone. But we called him at his office to ask him some questions. Hello, Charles. Thanks for speaking with me today.
Hello.
Let's start with a brief explanation of what the exhibit shows and what its purpose is. And what is that dramatic thing in the middle of the room?
Well, certainly one of the great stories that we like to share here in Boone is the story of Kate Shelley. And one of the things we wanted to do was to really place the Kate Shelley story in the backdrop of Boone history and Iowa history as well, and kind of show how it tied into the floods that happened in Boone that year, because 1881 was actually one of the wettest year on record here in Iowa. We wanted to set it into the backdrop of that, as well as talked about Kate Shelley, the incident, as well as what happened to her later in life. But one of the things we really wanted to give people was the experience of being Kate Shelley and walking in her footsteps. So the feature point of the exhibit is a recreation of the bridge that Kate Shelley would have crawled across. So in the center of the room, you walk in, you see this recreation of the bridge and what it looked like. And then it actually has water on the floor and the ties. So it gives the idea of what it would have been like when Kate Shelley would have had to crawl across the bridge on her hands and knees and drag herself from one tie to the next tie, being careful not to fall through the ties because Kate Shelley could not swim. So it was very important for her to maintain her balance on the bridge. So that was very important for us to give that impression to the visitors coming to the museum.
Wow. That sounds like an exciting exhibit. Now, what was happening in Boone that night?
So the incident would have happened on July 6, 1881. So in July, a lot of times how we'll have these huge thunderstorms come through central Iowa, and this is what happened during that night, where we're going to see an upwards of probably 7, 8, 9, 10 inches of rain all at once. You can well imagine what happens to that. And of course, at this time period, they would not have been the drainage system that we have today. So all that water would have pulled in all the low spots. So there's a lot of areas that would have suffered a tremendous amount of flooding. because at this point, Honey Creek would have been open in Boone, and a lot of the bridges would have been washed out as well within the city of Boone, because the railroad would have followed Honey Creek as it goes down, because it would have made a natural line for the railroad to follow. But unfortunately, it had to keep crossing Honey Creek again and again as the Honey Creek would meander.
Now, I'm wondering why the railroad sent out the pusher engines, and what were pusher engines anyway?
So the pusher engines would have been the engines that would have been stationed down in Mongo, and at least several of them would have been stationed down there generally on a regular basis. And they would have been used to push up the heavy steam engines up the Des Moines River Valley. They were helped to push up at all to check the bridges. So one heading towards Ogden, one heading towards Boone. And we talked about there was a lot of bridges between. There was in upwards of 50, 60 bridges between Boone and Ogden, which would be about 10, 15 miles of track. So they had to send out one heading towards Ogden, and they got to one of the bridges, and then the train crewman actually fell through the bridge, hit his head, and drowned. Then the engine came back. And then the other one heading towards the east, towards Boone, ended up crashing through the Honey Creek Bridge. It was kind of the focal point of the Kate Shelley story when she had to go down there and tell the men that she was going to go and get help. You know, I guess the rationale behind it was the railroad wanted to know what was going on with their bridge and what was happening during that time period would probably be the best explanation.
And they really weren't thinking much about the safety of the crew, right?
There seems to be some indication, yes, that some of the residents of the area around Mongoan area certainly felt that way, because there were a lot of hard feelings towards the railroad after the incident.
But the railroad did acknowledge her as a hero immediately and gave her some things that she was probably very appreciative to get. What were those?
As you mentioned, that the railroad certainly wanted to recognize Kate Shelley for her act of heroism, and that to begin with, that the railroad gave her some money. They also gave her a train car full of coal. And they also they recognized her at a railroad meeting that fall that was meeting in Cedar Rapids. Actually, a lot of the railroad was also involved in helping to fundraise for her, as well as the community was as well. There are a lot of accounts in the newspaper talking about how there was a Kate Shelley Fund. The railroad also presented her with a lifetime pass on the railroad. But the really cool thing about the pass was it would stop at her house to pick her up and let her off. They also had a lot of the union chapters around the United States would be named after Kate Shelley. They also had a train car that was named in her honor. And, of course, later on when they built the High Bridge, so they no longer needed to go that Honey Creek route and go directly west out of Boone over the High Bridge, that was named in her honor as well. I think the one thing, though, that there are very few historical accounts of young ladies doing historical things. That's not that they didn't do them. In many cases, they just weren't recorded. And I think that's why one of the reasons why the story is so popular and continues to be still popular, because it is of a young lady doing a very heroic deed. I think another part of it, too, is it's a very uplifting story about somebody self-sacrificing, somebody doing something good for other people, and really trying to basically risk their own life in order to help other people. So it certainly would be what most people would consider to be a definition of a hero.
Okay. I noticed that Kate's father had been a section man before he died in 1878, and that one of the men on engine number 11 was a section man. What was the job of a section man, and what was the job of Kate's father? He was a foreman, I understand.
So foreman would indicate that he was in charge of several men. Their men worked for them, and their job was to go out and to check and to make sure all these bridges, again, there was 20-some bridges between Boone and Mongoan, and they would be in charge of repairing these bridges to make sure that they were safe, as well as the tracks. So they'd go out every day and inspect, repair, and maintain all those bridges.
So if her father were still alive, would he have been on that train on that night?
It certainly appears he would have been, because, again, since the person that was in his position was on the train, all appearances would be that he would have been on the train as well that night.
Thank you very much, Charles. It's been very interesting. And you've really set the scene for the dark and stormy night.
Yeah, it was. It's a great story.
Now we're ready to go to the Mongoan station, and we can get the new director, Pam Schwartz, to take us there.
We're standing inside the Moingona Depot, which has been rebuilt. Can you tell us a little about that?
This depot is not the original depot that would have been here when Kate Shelley did her heroic deed. That depot burned down. And so this is a different depot that would have come from near the Beaver area that is of the same time period that replaced it.
There's a picture of the... Is that the actual bridge that she crossed?
This is the Des Moines River Bridge, and this is the bridge that she would have actually crossed that night. And it is often confused with the Kate Shelley High Bridges, but those weren't built until, you know, much, much later after this incident and just named in her honor. But this is a picture of the bridge that she would have crossed that night. Now, we do have this wonderful walking trail out behind the museum, and you can come and walk down. Like I said, it's about a half-hour trek back and forth if you don't spend much time at the end. All that's left of the bridge are the footings. The bridge itself is no longer there. But when you go out there, you can stand at the top of the hill and you can really get a feeling for how high the water was that night. You can really get a feeling for how far she climbed in this soaking wet dress with her lantern that had already gone out. And it's really, it puts you into the story because you can really, really get the sense of what it was she was feeling that night.
And this is a nice thing for people to know. One of the things we want to do is to make people aware of what's available for mm-hmm. them to see around in central Iowa. And I've lived here 50 years and I never heard till I started doing this story that there was a station out here. Mm-hmm. In fact, when the first person who told me is fairly new to town, and she said, I was walking in the woods and I came across this little museum and I could hardly believe it. Mm-hmm. So anybody who comes out here won't be able to come into the station. They can look through the windows, but they can definitely go on the path. Is it clearly
yes.
marked?
Not yet. The museum itself is, we don't have regular operating hours, but we are always open by appointment if staff allows. Because the Boone County Historical Society runs four museums, you know, we only have one paid staff member, which is myself, and so we can't be everywhere. But we are more than happy, if you know you're coming, to give us a call and have someone come out and show you through the depot. The grounds themselves are open year-round all the time if you want to brave the weather. You can come down and kind of look at the depot and walk down the trail, which is located, you know, just east of the depot. And we're working on getting grants and things right now to get better signage out here so that you can easily see where it's at. We're going to have more interpretive text panels outside for those people who don't necessarily care to make an appointment but would like to come enjoy the site. And also working on having a little picnic area and things so people can really come down here and enjoy themselves on a sunny afternoon. So this is our two-scale, is my understanding, model of the area. Now I'm showing you here, this is the depot we're in. This is where we're standing. This is the trek. Now, like I said, it's about a 15-minute walk. And this is the Des Moines River Bridge that Kate Shelley would have had to crawl across that night. And then if you come around here, this creek is right where the Honey Creek Bridge would have been. Now, she lived here up the hill. So she would have that night heard the bridge, come down, yelled to the men that she was going for help, come back to a different little area, crawled back up to the tracks, gone all the way up to the depot, come all the way back. They estimate her entire journey that night was probably close to 2 and 2.5 hours. And that includes getting to the depot, telling them, coming back out with the men. Because that's really the extraordinary thing, is that once she reached the depot, that wasn't the end. You know, she came back on that pusher engine with the other men to show them where the men who were drowning were. And when they got there, like Suzanne might have told you this, but when they got there, they couldn't get to the men from that side of the bridge. They had to go a different route. So having the knowledge of the area, she was able to guide them to a different place to take them to get back to the other side of the bridge to save the men. So she just had quite an ordeal at night. She just kept going and going and going. So this is, it's a really nice diorama because you can really get a better feel for the layout of the land and exactly her exact path.
Yes, and where is the Shelley land?
This would have been the Shelley land here.
So it's pretty hilly.
Yes, yep. Hard scrabble. You know, it wasn't some place you're gonna plant corn and things like that. But they did have a small farm, sheep and things like that.
And it was bounded on one side by the Des Moines River and the other side by Honey Creek.
Honey
Is that
Creek.
Right?
Yep. Kind of sat in between the two. And she, you know, she, the house was surrounded by the railroad. When you live on the railroad, you know when the trains come by and you know what the different whistles mean and all that. And being raised as a railroad child, her father having worked on the railroad, I think it was kind of ingrained in her, to know how dire things could have become that night had that passenger train come through. You know, she just had a really good understanding of the railroad, and that's something she continued the rest of her life. This is not the only accident Kate Shelley encountered and helped with. Of course, you know, there was one much later where she helped the men until, you know, on a train wreck until the, you know, more help could get there. And she was just sort of a railroad heroine her whole life. It didn't just stop with that night. She really did follow in her father's footsteps in having that sort of passion and accountability to the railroad and its men.
We discovered that there are also opportunities to explore the east side of the river and to see the Honey Creek Bridge site. One of the present owners of the Shelley land tells us how.
My name is Joe Reuter, and I've owned about 73 acres of the original Shelley farm. The original Shelley farm was 161 acres. And there's four owners. There's myself, there's a gentleman from Nevada, and one from near Boone that have some smaller tracts. And then the fourth one is the Army Corps of Engineers. The Army Corps of Engineer property is includes the old Honey Creek Bridge site, which is a public property. You can access that. It's not signed very well, and I need to talk to the county about getting some signs up for that. Now, my part is also a Christmas tree farm, which people can visit during the Christmas season to pick out a Christmas tree. And we may also be selling this spring some potted white pine trees, if there's enough interest in that. The location of it is 1323 Montana Road. That's about a mile and a fourth west of the four-corner or four-way stop on U.S. 30 in Boone. Go about a mile and a quarter west, and then it's about a mile south. And then you will also see on the highway a Boone white sign that says Enchanted Valley Tree Farm pointing towards the south. So if you make that turn, you're on Montana Road, and our Christmas tree park is about a mile from there. As you start going down the hill, you will see a sign to the west that says Historic Kate Shelley Farm. That's part of my property. That's that doesn't have public access, but if somebody wanted to, you know, stop and take a picture, you know, with sign or something like that, I'm sure that would be okay. It's a really interesting place, very, very rolling. I've had people come out here, and it reminds them of being in the mountains, because really the land was cut down by the glacier. And, you know, you get down at my entrance, and you look up, and it, you know, it looks like mountains almost. There's, you know, steep hills. And when you come get your Christmas tree, you can go up the hill, and there's some great views. It's a little harder to get to, but on my Christmas tree part, you can actually see Mongona from the Des Moines River. You can get a nice view of the river, and then also Mongona, you know, before the leaves come on the trees. Once you get on the land, it's not an easy place to work and do things because it's hilly, and that means you have to struggle a little bit, and of course that's what the Shelley family had to do, so I think that fits right in.
With all we've learned, we haven't really heard anything about Kate's personality yet. What kind of person was she? What did she like to do? To answer those questions, I'm talking with Suzanne Caswell, editor of the Journal of Boone County History, Trail Tales, who wrote the recent fall-winter's issue on Kate Shelley.
She obviously took responsibility very seriously. When her father died, she took on the responsibility for the family. So she took the responsibility of being the eldest child extremely seriously.
Her brother drowned, I understand?
Yes, the year after her father died. He couldn't swim, and he drowned in the Des Moines River.
there's some indication that her mother had periods of poor health. What the nature of that is, we're not sure. It could have been depression. She'd lost a son and she'd lost a husband.
Yes.
And she might have been unable to cope with the kind of existence that was thrust upon her after this.
It was a pretty hard existence anyway.
Yes, right. The farm it's a beautiful area, but it's not a particularly fertile area as far as, you know, the farm was on a hillside. And of course it would wash out. Would have been hard to farm. And so Kate really had held it together. Kate Shelley was an interesting person. She had an interesting life afterwards. She went to college for one semester. She really had received very little education. She had dropped out of school in order to take care of her family. And so I'm sure she appreciated it, but I don't think she really had the background to study in a college. And she came home. She had various kinds of jobs. She did teach for a while. I've run into people who have said, oh, my mother had Kate Shelley as a teacher. Her sister was a teacher, too. But she also worked as a nurse or applied to be a nurse. But I think her main job was to keep that farm together and take care of her mother. She was a crack shot with a rifle. There was one occasion, it was around 1903, some men were chasing a wolf up from the ledges. And they chased him onto the animal, onto the Shelley property. And Kate came out and they told her what she was doing. She gets a rifle and shoots him. One shot.
Well, of course, if she's trying to make a living on a hardscrabble farm, she probably did a little hunting.
Yeah. Oh, she did a lot of hunting. And she loved animals. She loved dogs and cats and played with them and had a lot of dogs and cats around. There are pictures of her with a couple of different dogs. She also liked to square dance.
You have been listening to Local Talk on KHOI Community Radio. Our subject today is Kate Shelley, known as the Girl Who Saved the Train. In the first part of the program, we dealt with the history and the sites that we can explore here to give us the feeling for events. Now it's time to honor Kate's legend as told in poetry and song. For those who've listened from the beginning of this program, the story is pretty familiar, and the artistic presentations are all pretty consistent with that. But each retelling has its own unique meaning, and we have three very different examples. First, we have a song played and sung by a very remarkable woman, Winona Decker, or Winona Meilenbusch, as she was known when she first performed it in 1956 for the 75th anniversary of the July 6th, 1881 event. KHOI reporter Kay Puttock and Winona's son Tom Meilenbusch visited with the 91-year-old songwriter at Riverside Manor a few days ago. This 5-minute song with 8 verses is too long for this program, but we want to share a bit of Winona's still-sweet voice, both spoken and in song. She accompanies herself on the keyboard.
Did you grow up hearing this story about Kate Shelley?
Yes. We lived on Honey Creek. And that was the creek that ran down through and went into the Des Moines River. Kate Shelley, the girl who saved the train. Near her home there were two bridges, cross the river and the creek. she could hear an engine chugging on its way. And across the weakened trestle, leading over Honey Creek, with a grinding crash, the wooden bridge gave way. Kate Shelley, Kate Shelley, the girl who saved that
train. Now we shift to a ghostly interpretation of the story by a young McKinley Cantor, who wrote this in the summer of 1930, when he was visiting his hometown of Webster City and discovered the story of Kate Shelley at a time when it was half forgotten. He later went on to win a Pulitzer Prize in 1956 for his novel Andersonville, but in 1930 he was a freelance journalist looking for subjects. Like so many others, he found Kate's story inspiring, and wrote the only account we have found that honors her Irish heritage. For she was born in Ireland and brought to the United States as an infant by her parents. For today's presentation of McKinley Cantor's Ballad of Kate Shelley, we're adding accompaniment by Irish harps to set the tone. The rails that run by Honey Creek are eaten up with rust, and no one walks the greasy bed hid in the roses dust. But yet, at night, a slender ghost may stalk the quiet sky, and bats will shiver as they see Kate Shelley going by. Kate Shelley from a quiet house, Kate Shelley in the storm. She took a lantern in her hand to keep her spirit warm. The clouds came up and thundered haste, and Honey Creek was foam. The waters laughed with blackened breath below Kate Shelley's home. O daughter, go you to the door, I hear a whistle call, crying within the valley dark that shadows over all. Your father was a section man, you were the seed he sowed. So listen, listen in the storm, and guard the iron road. Her father was a section man. She knew the mighty wheels that ground along the bottomland amid the tempest's heels. She listened in the howling dark and heard a sundered scream when 90 tons of steel went down into the boiling stream. My father was a section man. He reared me for the road. She climbed the gashed and sullen grade while oaken saplings bowed. She prayed to gods of spade and pick, she prayed to tie and rail. The river bridge was like a priest in rainy vestments pale. The midnight coaches from the west plunged in the dripping rain. West of Moingona the ties were sound, east was a broken train. East, in the bile of Honey Creek, in one drowned twisted curl, lay 90 tons of twisted steel. Between them was a girl. Under the river bridge was death, black fathoms frothing down. Beyond Moingona sang the train, onto a lonely town. The engineer swayed in his cab, he could not see ahead. 2 hours more, I'll leave the run and get me home to bed. 2 hours more, the whistle whined shrill in the driven rain. 2 hours more, a broken span, a ghost where there was a train. Across the river bridge, a girl came creeping on the ties. The wind wiped out her lantern flame, but still she had her eyes. And still she had her Irish soul, and still she had her heart. The spikes cut furrows in her skin and tore her flesh apart. 2 yards beneath, the river's tongue clove at the spiking span. A wraith beside her urged her on. Ollie was a section man. Down in a pocket of the hills, Moingona hid its head, and Medwin muscles pillowed down, slumbering as the dead. One light shone thinly through the night under the battle din. A bleeding hand clutched the door, a torn shape staggered in.
No song of thanks, no valiant yell. God, the train is saved. None but wheels which tightened down when crimson lanterns waved. Nothing but brandy held to lips by someone of the crew. I'll ride the cabs, she cried, and show just where the boys went through. She rode the cab and guided them, the anxious whistle bawled. She rode in torn and bloody rags the ties where she had crawled. And if the station mice were there, they saw the sundered heap and watched the rescue party toil before Kate went to sleep. And 49 years are gone, the trains no longer come along the crest of Honey Creek before Kate Shelley's home. Oh, there were songs for other years when all the road was hers, and there were men to bless her name and gold to fill her purse. But if you go to Honey Creek in some dark summer storm, be sure you take a lantern flame to keep your spirit warm. For there will be a phantom train and foggy whistle cries, and in the lightning flare you'll see Kate Shelley on the ties. Our final interview today is with Al Harris and Tom Richards, who wrote Backtrackin', the piece that we use for the theme music for Local Talk. As you know by now, it's from their CD, The Ballad of Kate Shelley, and I wanted to know what inspired them to write these railroad songs.
You know, about 8 or 10 years of thinking about doing this railroad disc, finally I had a melody hit me, the Kate Shelley melody, and I knew then that it was time to gather some material. You grow up around Boone, you hear a lot of stories about Kate Shelley, and that's the girl that saved the train. That's what I heard for many years. And that's why it was in that part of our song. But finally, when the melody hit, and I looked back, and I remembered all these stories, and I got on the internet and looked at other stories, and I just kind of put all this stuff together, and actually, when I sat down to write the song, it just flew onto the paper. It really just... And I don't know if I got all the info straight or what, but I was kind of happy the way the song came out. So,
well, it's a very moving song. I've been wanting to do this interview for a long time, partly because, as you may know, Local Talk, which is our flagship program, has Backtrackin' for their theme song. And at the end, we always say, our theme song is Backtrackin' from The Ballad of Kate Shelley. And I thought, that's really classy. Backtrackin' could be anywhere, but The Ballad of Kate Shelley is our listening area.
I was happy to write a song about Kate Shelley. The line in the song about what bravery she showed that night, it's just incredible. I don't think I could have crawled across that trestle in the daylight without a storm. I mean, she responded and did this. It was really something, so...
I have 3 girls. They're getting grown up now, but you know, you can say to a kid, a Central Iowa kid, you have to be like Kate Shelley, and they know what you know, you don't have to explain. She's a real model for...
Absolutely, yeah.
Your other railroad songs, where you talk about the Kate Shelley High Bridge, do you have just one song about the Kate Shelley High Bridge?
You know, the thing is, that if a songwriter from these parts that writes about life, writes from experience, is going to eventually is going to mention the Kate Shelley High Bridge. I mean, it's kind of a big landmark around here. It's just sort of part of being from these parts.
I'm heading back from Fremont on this old freight train. Across the Iowa border, rolling over these great plains. 20 years a conductor, an old locomotive riding home again. Steaming toward tomorrow, with dreams from yesterday. Steaming toward tomorrow, better get on board. All aboard for this train pulls away. Miss Kate Shelley High Bridge, we'll be crossing you real soon. Over the Des Moines River, then 3 more miles into Boone. Spend the night with my wife. Come morning, I'll be called out by noon. Steaming toward tomorrow with dreams from yesterday. Steaming toward tomorrow. Better get on board, haul aboard, for this train pulls away. Next month is my vacation, September and old puffer belly days. Gonna join that celebration with people from nearly every state. Take a ride on 1385 and feel them old-fashioned railroad ways. Steaming toward tomorrow with dreams from yesterday. Steaming toward tomorrow. You'd better get on board, haul aboard, for this train pulls away. I said you better get on board, haul aboard, for this train pulls away.
When the 1901 viaduct was completed, it was the longest double-track bridge in the world. It opened on May 19th, 1901, and there were 6,000 people attending that opening. It was a Sunday. And Kate Shelley was one of them that was there that day. Officially, there was no plaque put on it until 1982, and it was during Puffer Belly days when they put a plaque on the bridge. When the new bridge was constructed and opened in 2009, it was officially named the Kate Shelley High Bridge. And that bridge is actually higher and taller than the older bridge. So the two together form the two highest double-track bridges in the United States, at least.
And they're both named the Kate Shelley High Bridge?
Yeah, one and two, I guess.
You have been listening to Local Talk on KHOI Community Radio. Today we have been talking about the life and legend of Kate Shelley. Your hosts for today have been Susan Franzen and Gina McAndrews. We spoke with Misty McNally, Pam Schwartz, Executive Director of the Boone County Historical Center, Susan Caswell, Editor of Trail Tales, the Journal of Boone County History, Joseph Reuter, owner of Enchanted Valley Tree Farm, Charles Irwin, Winona Decker, Tom Meilenbusch, Al Harris, and Tom Richards. You can find more information about the Boone County Historical Center at www.boonecountyhistory.org. That's www.boonecountyhistory.org, or call 515-432-1907. Reporter Kay Puttock contributed to this program. Local Talk is engineered by Rick Morrison. Music you heard today included Kate Shelley, The Girl Who Saved the Train, A True Story of Heroism by Winona Decker, Sally Ann by Art Rosenbaum and Al Murphy from their CD, Fiddle and Banjo Music from Iowa and Another Place or Two, Lady Keith's Lament by Granine Hambly and William Jackson from their CD, Music from Ireland and Scotland, The Ballad of Kate Shelley, Steamin' Toward Tomorrow, and our theme song, Backtrackin', by Al Harris and Tom Richards from their CD, The Ballad of Kate Shelley. You can also listen to this show and all of our past Local Talk shows online at our website, khoifm.org. and see listings of our past guests and resource contact information. You will also find lists of our guests and contact information to the organizations we speak with and other resources mentioned on our shows. If you enjoyed this show, tell your friends. Local Talk is a radio production training workshop as well as a radio show. If you would like to join the team as a reporter, contact us at 292-2878 or contact us through our website, khoifm.org. Your participation as audience is what makes this show possible. Thank you for listening and see you again on the radio.
Storm was raging, the rain just wouldn't stop coming down. The river and creeks were flooding in the Des Moines River Valley near the railroad station by Mondona Town. Around 11 in the evening, a pusher train went out to search for men looking for washouts along the track. The Shelley family home, a mighty crash. The Shelleys heard the Honey Creek Bridge had just collapsed. 15-year-old Kate Shelley ran outside into the storm, saw two men trapped down in that river grave. She couldn't rescue them herself, but knew that midnight train would be sooner coming down the tracks this way. 100 years from now, folks will still speak her name. Kate Shelley will always be that girl who saved the train. Kate had to hurry to warn Mondona Station, and that old trestle bridge was the only way. Darkness and the storm, she crawled on her hands and knees across that tiny catwalk in the pouring rain. Halfway across the river, a tree crashed into the trestle. Kate was sure that shaky bridge would fall apart. Just at the last moment, that tree slipped through the pier's knees, the fear of death beating in her heart. The other side, she ran to Mondona Station, warning them that the bridge had just washed out. The agent stopped the train just before it passed through, otherwise that train would have been hellbound. 100 years from now, folks will still speak her name. Kate Shelley will always be that girl who saved the train. Kate led a rescue train and saved the two men in the river, and Lord, only two men lost their lives. Many more would have died if not for this young girl's courage. What bravery Kate Shelley showed that night. What bravery Kate Shelley showed that night. 100 years from now, folks will still speak her name. Kate Shelley will always be that girl who saved the train. Kate Shelley.